with our very special guest tonight, Whitley Strieber. And when we come back, we'll be talking about his latest work, which is forthcoming, Solving the Communion Enigma, What is to Come. Whitley's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, sometime in January, Whitley Strieber's book, Solving the Communion Enigma, comes out. What is to come, as a matter of fact. Whitley, this is an interesting book. You haven't done something like this in a long time.
No, I haven't written nonfiction in 10 years. And there's a reason for the fact that I haven't done that in 10 years and the fact that I've done it now. The first thing is, 10 years ago, a couple of things happened. Right before I published my book, Confirmation, mm-hmm. I had something happen that really frightened me. Parade magazine published a false article about me saying that I had discovered that I had temporal lobe epilepsy and had made a contribution to the Epilepsy Foundation. This was a complete fabrication. It was not true. In fact, the opposite was true. I had discovered I definitely did not have it. I took the most aggressive tests there are for this disease, and not only did I not have it, what I had was an extremely stable brain, very much the opposite.
Were they trying to prove that you were a little whacked out, or what?
They were trying, and it was a very innocent thing on the part of the magazine, I think. They eventually published a retraction, but not before it killed the book.
Really?
Oh, no. The book sales were terrible, and in fact, there was an article about me on the Huffington Post a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, that is the kind of place where someone like me is going to just be pilloried. And this article about my book, The Key, came out, written by a lovely guy and an old friend, Lee Spiegel.
Oh, yeah. No,
you
Lee
know,
well.
Lee is a great guy. In any case, the troll patrol of making comments.
This
is a troll thick website, and they were just going absolutely to town. And one of the things they kept saying was, "He's already admitted that he has temporal lobe epilepsy."
Oh man!
Basing it on that
article.
Article,
yeah.
Of course, and nobody read the retraction. People never read retraction.
No.
But when I called the magazine up and talked to the editor, he said, "Oh, yes, our publisher got that from a friend of yours in the Air Force."
What?
Yeah. And I said, my uncle was in the Air Force, but I don't know anyone in the Air Force, and I certainly haven't talked to anyone in the Air Force about this. And I've published in my book Transformation, all of the details about the fact that I was not afflicted by this disease. So they published the retraction, but I was very disturbed by that. I didn't know what to make of it. I was unable to figure out how to investigate whether or not someone in the Air Force had violated the law of this land by putting a piece of propaganda in an American newspaper like that. I had not the first idea of how to do it. But when I went to the Pentagon to talk about my book on the book tour, the Pentagon bookstore, I stood there talking, and there was one row of seats was filled with uniformed Air Force personnel all standing there, sitting there, glaring at me. And it just scared me. It scared me.
Yeah.
I'm not a person who is comfortable with that kind of thing. I'm not involved. And when I got into this,
it discharges you, doesn't it?
I had no idea there was any kind of secrecy, that there was any kind of hidden information about UFOs. The idea was just laughable. So I wasn't really prepared even then, even all these years later, 10 years later, after 1999, I guess, when I published Confirmation, I wasn't prepared for this. And so that kind of shut me up. But more than that, and I don't even know if any Air Force personnel were involved. I have no idea. I just remember what the man said. I never investigated and never went into it. It could be that I even misheard him. I don't know. In any case, I got to thinking to myself, well, you know, if I want to publish nonfiction about this again, I have got to publish something that actually clearly says what is happening, because we don't know. By the year 2000, I was quite certain that the alien hypothesis and the idea that it's aliens from another planet who are studying, coming here and studying us scientifically, et cetera, was simply not an adequate answer, and it isn't. And all of these different alien species that are supposed to be here, et cetera, and so forth, there may be aliens here, but something much larger, much more extraordinary, and much more actually miraculous is happening.
But do we know what that is?
I can give you a good idea.
Okay.
And it has to do with a discovery that Anne made back early in the early days. She was keeping a chart on her wall in her our office of all of these different things that were recurring themes in the letters she was reading.
And Anne, by the way, those of you just joining us, is Whitley's wife.
My wife, Anne.
Okay.
Who was reading all of these letters along with her secretary, Laurie Barnes, and who herself, incidentally, had one of the most spectacular close encounters that ever occurred at our cabin happened to Laurie. But in any case, they discovered something that we found to be true at the cabin, and that was that people's dead friends and relatives show up in the context of close encounter experiences.
That's interesting.
Now, that to me tells me that we have no basic idea of what's going on here. Because if it's alien scientists from another planet, what are they doing?
With spirits.
Yeah. I'll give you a perfect example of this. A young man, a man was frantically trying to get a hold of me by telephone, called my agency in New York, which is hard to find. I mean, he was really working.
You got to dig for that stuff.
Yeah. So I called him back, and he says to me, I want to tell you a story, and I want to know if this ever happens to anybody. He said, 2 nights ago, my son came running downstairs. He said, first the dog was restless. The dog was already ready for bed, but suddenly the dog was restless and wanted to go out. My wife opened the front door to take the dog out, and she saw fire go through the sky and disappear across the trees. He was an FAA inspector, and she called out to him, you're going to get a call. A plane has just gone down in flames. At that moment, their little boy ran down the stairs saying, Mommy, Daddy, little men came into my room, and they had Johnny, his older brother, with them. And he said to tell you he was all right. And the thing is, this boy had died the week before in an auto accident. And the man wanted to know if this had ever happened to anyone else. And I was able to tell him that it was actually quite a common experience.
If these aren't extraterrestrials from other planets and they're mingling with the spirit world, it could be a deception, Whitley.
That's true, and I do think that this requires clear thinking, because there is something unfolding here that we are just at the edge of understanding. We're not there yet.
No.
And but I'll give you another example. We had as many as, I think, 17 people at our cabin. And we would have very complex encounter experiences with the visitors. One of these, there were people asleep in the no one was asleep. That didn't happen during these nights. No one went to sleep. No one comes into a situation like that, turns over and casually goes to sleep. But they were all awake, and they were in the living room, when suddenly they found they could still talk to each other, but they couldn't move. And there were these forms jumping around inside the room, these dark forms. And they were like an acrobatic team. One of them said it was like the Flying Karamazov brothers in the room. And they were talking to each other and saying, do you see that? And am I crazy, or am I seeing this too? And these things were jumping around. And meanwhile, what we didn't know was in the basement, sleeping immediately below them, there was a couple, and the couple woke up and saw standing at the foot of their bed, while this was going on, unbeknownst to them upstairs, a friend. The friend had died in the Mexico City earthquake.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. Standing there saying, yes, I'm fine. And this was typical.
Do you tie this into the UFO flaps that we get, all these sightings, or are these many different things that are going on?
No, one thing is going on.
One.
One thing. It is the most complex thing that has ever happened. It is enormously complex. It implies that not only is this universe much stranger than we realize, but intelligent life in this universe is much different from what we can see. There is much more to it.
Is it teeming everywhere?
Not in the ways. I have a feeling that consciousness injected into this level of what we see as the ordinary physical world is rarer by far than other types of consciousness, the nature of which we can have only begun to be able to even sense the presence of. That this, in the Master of the Key, in my book, The Key, talks about conscious energy. And I suspect that is much more prevalent in the universe than physical consciousness, because I have a feeling that life, physical life, only lasts a relatively short time, and we're like a generator. We're generating a new species. We are becoming a new conscious species of conscious energy. I have a feeling that might be where the dead go.
Whitley, are the craft that people report, the craft that they see, are they illusions or are they physical?
I think it's a mixture of a lot of different things. I think they may be, some of them, penetrations. And now, as I said just a few minutes ago, this is complicated. This is real complicated.
Would it be over our heads?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I'm just talking at the edge of it, and it's way over my head, and I'm sure the heads of the most extraordinary minds on this planet right now, but not always. It won't always be, or we wouldn't be able to talk about it at all,
yeah.
I can assure you. In any case, I think one of the things that happens is, I think parallel universes are physically real. In other words, this isn't the only universe. There is literal physical life unfolding all around us that we can't see or communicate with in any way, or can we?
And they may be all interconnected.
And some of these UFOs, especially the ones that are like orbs and bright lights, are attempts to penetrate into this reality from another reality. I have a feeling that that is part of it.
But have you totally discounted life on other planets, intelligent life?
Oh, no.
Not at all.
Absolutely not. I think that it probably exists, and I suspect that some of it has gotten here, but not often. And not a lot. The reason for that is that I think that physical species, the passage through the physical realm, is a short-lived phenomenon in the life of an intelligent species. Just like radio, we broadcast radio out into outer space for only about 40 or 50 years before now we're broadcasting far less than we were back in the 1960s or 70s, because everything is now involved with satellite transmissions, beaming things directly down to the surface and bouncing things back to the surface. So we're disappearing in terms of radio, and I think the physical life of intelligent species is probably fairly brief as well. And I'm not so sure that in this form that we have the ability to travel for very long distances in time and space. Like, for example, it's recently been discovered that astronauts who have spent a lot of time aboard the International Space Station are having eye problems. And the reason is that, and sometimes these eye problems, the blurred vision that they're experiencing is corrects itself over time, but it's caused by an increase in the pressure of spinal fluid against, mm-hmm. against the optic nerve, or against the eyes, due to weightlessness. And they are thinking that if they can't figure a way to fix this, people on long-range space flights to other planets and so forth are going to go blind. And the body is too heavy and complex.
That's interesting.
To be, yeah. And I have, but like, for example, the visitors are very, very ephemeral and small. And
light, feathery.
Yeah. And touching one of them is like touching a feather or deer skin or something. I've held their hands in my hands, and they're not like us. They're not big and heavy.
Are you sure they're not robots?
No. I wouldn't say that I would be sure of that in all of their cases. But certainly some of them weren't. Like, for example, I have a dear friend.
I mean, we're going to have robots in 20 years that will look human. We already have them now.
Yeah, but we also are, in fact, we already have machines that have passed the Turing test, which is the test that if you can't tell whether or not you're talking to a human being, then it's,
yeah.
And we can build programs that are indistinguishable
That's
from
right.
having a conversation with a human being as long as you're not looking at them. But,
Whitley, you're real, aren't you, right now?
Maybe. I hope so. But even then, I mean, let's not even go down that road, because if we go down that road as to what's real and what's not, then we're going to really be in trouble
That's
here.
Right. But you were saying you have a friend.
I have a friend who, on the day Ann and I left New York forever, we were down driving toward Roanoke, Virginia, and the phone rang in the car. And I picked it up, and it was this buddy of mine. I've known him for years. And he said to me, he was the first person I ever told the story of the visitors to. I told it even before I told Ann, because, you know, how do you tell your wife that? I mean, I needed a friend to try to work out how I told her that without having her run screaming and cancel my marriage and everything. But in any case, he said, Whitley, I saw the woman. I said, what woman? He said, I saw the woman on the cover of Communion. I saw her on 14th Street just now. He said, I was stuck in traffic, and she walked up to the car and leaned in the window. And as soon as I saw her face, I knew who it was. I said, and then he said, but Whitley, she looks more human, and she's prettier than on the cover of the book. And that's true. The cover was not a success. The cover makes her look much less. In fact, if you actually looked at her and were face-to-face with her, you almost could see, you could see the humanity in that face. And you could see you'd think, this is a person who's a terrible mutant, a mutation.
But not at all.
And yet at the same time, something so profoundly different from us. It's just the most contradictory, strangest, and in many ways the most frightening and beautiful thing you can imagine.
Whitley, when we come back, let's get more into the spirit world and why these entities seem to be dabbling in it. That's fascinating. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Whitley Strieber as we're talking about his upcoming book, Solving the Communion Enigma. We'll be back. Well, next hour, as we continue chatting with Whitley Strieber, we'll take some of your phone calls as well here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, by the way, right now, our Facebook friends, we are sitting at 99,423 Facebook friends. All you have to do is go to our website. I want to go over 100,000 right now. Just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Way up there in the right-hand corner, click the Facebook icon. And then all you have to do is hit the like button, and in you go. And over 100,000 we go probably in a few minutes. Well, let's get back into this and then explain what you think is going on here, the fact that they're dabbling in the spirit world. This is bizarre.
Well, I wonder if they're dabbling in it or coming out of it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it almost seems as if it kind of everything is happening in the sense that something is happening on an energetic level, something is happening on the physical level, because some of my experiences were very physical, and so were the experiences of a lot of people at the cabin, and obviously from the letters we've gotten, that's many, many experiences are much more physical than they are anything. And yet at the same time, other experiences were profoundly spiritual, and sometimes in a very dark way, and other times in a way that is that was transformative. So, you know, you're just looking at something here that is real big. It's a lot bigger than we are. It is conscious over a whole spectrum of reality, a large part of which most of us don't even believe is there. And very much in your face, too. That's the amazing thing about it. This is in our face. I mean, right now, we are in the middle of a big UFO flap on planet Earth. It would have been a sensation in the press in 1955 if this had been what's happening now, had been happening then. But the press no longer reports this.
Well, what? That's true. They don't. The old Frank Edwards and those kind of people, those reporters are gone, aren't they?
Gone. They're gone. And, you know, the average reporter is going to take the same, have the same reaction to this that I saw on those people on the Huffington Post. They're just total denial, a total ignorance, totally outside of the loop, completely. To the extent that, you know, we talk about this all the time on Coast, and it's got a big audience, and there's a lot of people listening right now. But there are a whole lot more people out there who aren't. And believe me, if this thing ever comes into any kind of focus, they are going to be surprised.
What does your gut tell you about this, Whitley? After all these years, and then you're going to have to tell us why you waited 10 years for writing Solving the Communion.
Enigma. My gut tells me that it wouldn't have happened to me like it happened, unless there wasn't at least the possibility that could happen to everybody, and not only me. I mean, when I say me, I'm talking about myself and thousands of other people. I think that it's possible that at some point, this is going to kind of come into focus. And I don't think it's going to involve some kind of a landing on the White House lawn. I mean, I hope not, because if that happened publicly, 90% of it would still be kept from us.
And I think that would be a violent finale. If a UFO landed on the White House lawn, I think troops would shoot at it. It would be a mess.
We've been shooting at them for years. Dr. Milton Torres, who was, you know, in 2000.
He was ordered to shoot, wasn't he?
He was ordered to. I mean, the man was terrified up there in that little fighter, the F-18 or whatever it was he was in, over Surrey in the dead of the night, being asked to shoot at some kind of a target that was the size of an aircraft carrier. And then later on, he was told to keep it secret for the rest of his life. And he did until the British Ministry of Defense simply published the whole story, and then went public, why not, and told his story, which is an extraordinary, harrowing story of a young man being sent out to shoot rockets at a gigantic, awesome machine. And then afterwards, people began to say, well, it was a CIA project that was supposed to simulate a radar return, and it wasn't a UFO at all. But then it turned out that very project hadn't even begun until the mid-60s, and this event had taken place in 1957. So Dr. Torres assertion that this was a craft from another world is probably the truth. But where is that other world? Is it right here, George?
Has it always been here?
Exactly. Has it always been here? Is it right here? Is it all around us, but we can't see them and they can't see us? Was it really something from another distant planet that came across the universe in some unknown manner? I don't know what it was.
Should we be concerned about this, Whitley? About these visitations?
Certainly. Because if they do show up in some focused way, whatever they are, this world is going to change completely. And I think that's probably why the shooting goes on. Because, you know, if after the tsunami, there is in the Indian Ocean a little group of islands on which there live very primitive people who are protected by the state of India, the country of India. They don't allow anyone to come onto these islands. These people don't even have boats. They just live on these islands. And they don't allow people to fly over them. They don't allow them to come near them. They protect these people because these are simple, very primitive people who have never really seen the outside world. But after the tsunami, the Indian government was concerned about their welfare. Were they all right? Were they in need? What was the situation? They sent a helicopter, and these people stood on the shore of their island shaking their spears at the helicopter.
Yeah, they didn't know what it was.
And that's what we're doing. That's what the Air Force, with all of its pretentious nonsense, and it's ordering these young men to fly, probably some of them, to their deaths to shoot at these things, is doing.
Well, you remember that
little guy shaking their spears. That's the secret. And if the secrets ever come out, if this government ever collapses or whatever may happen to it in the future, I don't know, and the secrets ever come out, you know what we're going to say? We're going to all look at each other and say, how embarrassing.
Yeah.
They're idiots. They were idiots.
See, you're lucky you weren't taken and kept, because I'm convinced some people have been.
Oh, yeah. There's no question in my mind about that. And maybe have gone willingly. I had a moment, George, a moment that haunts me to this day, when I stood in my woods. I had made, in this bizarre way, a plan to go and sit on a bench that I had built in my setup in my woods for this purpose, mm-hmm. and talk to one of these beings, one of the grays.
Try to befriend them?
And they called me in the one morning in February, I believe, of 1987.
That's cold.
I threw my slippers on. I threw my robe on. And I went down there. But I could see through the trees where the leaves were all gone. I could see in the clearing beyond the little woods that there was this thing there. I could see this big gray shape and these other figures standing near it. I could hear the noise it was making. And I stopped, and I heard in my head a voice, and this was fairly rare with them. They didn't usually communicate this way. And this voice said, come on, come on. And it was so harsh, I couldn't do it. It was too scary. I couldn't go down there because I thought to myself,
yes, that's why you were going.
If I go down there now, I am never coming home again. My wife is going to wake up and her husband will just have disappeared.
Gone.
And then what happens to her? And so I turned around, and I returned to the house. And I put my hand on the doorknob. I heard, coming from up the air above the woods, three of the most heartrending cries, the richest sounds I've ever heard in my life. I will never forget them. I remember them vividly at this moment as I'm speaking. They were cries from a heart that is deeper than any kind of heart we have. But what kind of a heart was it? Was it the heart of a lover disappointed or the heart of a predator disappointed?
That's right.
Or both. I'll never know now, but I will never, ever forget that moment.
When this all started happening to you, how did Anne react to this? How did she react to you?
Anne is a stronger human being than I think I could ever describe. Her reaction was, oh, wonderful. Now it's explained why you were going so nuts and why you were trying to force me to divorce you and stuff. Because I, at the time, if I had gone insane, if I had become psychotic, she would have been stuck with me until I could be released, until I was well enough to defend a divorce.
Yeah.
And I knew that, and I thought that was happening, and I was trying to get her to leave me. And she had no intention of doing that because she wasn't going to leave. There's no way.
She hung in then. She's hanging in now.
She's hung in. I mean, she's here for the ride, and it's been quite a ride, I can tell you. And I mean, but you know, it's, and she was actually relieved when I told her what was going on, because then she finally understood.
Do you think these visitors intentionally try to harm humans?
At times, yes.
No, that's not good.
No, I can tell you hair-raising stories, and I don't think they're all homogeneous. This isn't all one thing. There's a lot going on here. As I said before, there is an element of it that's physical. Whether it's always physical or not, I don't know. Whether it's aliens from another planet in part or in whole, I don't know. But I do know this. Some experience, like my first experience, I'm still under treatment today for the injuries I received. Even all these years later, I still have problems with that. I still have anxiety attacks. I've had one last week at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've got these little tranquilizers I can take in the middle of the night.
We just did a whole show for an hour on anxiety, panic attacks.
Panic attacks. Well, I have those still. After all these years at 3 o'clock in the morning, sometimes I'll wake up. I'm not scared or anything anymore. I don't feel fear, but my heart is pounding. And I'm just, you know, kind of breathless. And it's not organic. The doctors have checked me out thoroughly. But then when I take one of the tranquilizers, it'll go away after 10 minutes.
That's a horrible feeling, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You actually think you're dying.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's very scary. And I've had this ever since it happened. And obviously, something incredibly intense happened to me, and that was physical in its nature, because my body is reacting to it. But other things have happened that were beautiful. And once I started going out in the woods in the night, they took me kind of under their wing. They began to educate me. And I was in that school for another 10 or 11 years. One of the reasons I wrote Community Enigma was to describe the things that happened in those years, because after I was, gosh, I mean, I'm telling you, I've been beaten up and beaten up and beaten up. I've been laughed at one too many times by these ignoramuses and denied people. They have been denied the chance to hear the truth. And so the result is you go on a website outside of the context of this material where people don't know anything about it, and they're just helpless. They're ignorant and foolish and totally uninformed. It's just shameful what has happened to them, and it's not their fault. It's not their fault. It's the fault of when you see the local news people snickering away over a UFO report.
Yeah.
It's their fault.
You could see it right before their commercial break.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't do the research that reporters should be doing. The New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, they don't do the research because they have a preconception about this, that it's all nonsense. And that preconception comes out of their egos. Because, in fact, what is here, whatever it is vastly larger than we are, and it just sweeps away all of our imaginings about who and what we are and the nature of the world around us. And it is much bigger than anything we have ever thought of. and in general, far beyond our comprehension.
We have been visited, I believe, since the beginning of mankind, maybe before even civilizations existed. What do you think?
Such remarkable things have happened in this world. Like, for example, the cave paintings at Clairvaux and at Lascaux. These extraordinary things, and this is what happened. The first set of paintings that we have found are beautiful. They were made 30,000 years ago. And then 15,000 years ago, in another cave, other equally perfect, beautiful, incredibly accomplished paintings were suddenly made. And we know from the second cave, from the handprints they left, that these paintings were probably made by young teenagers and children. What was going on? And look at that gulf of time, 15,000 years, enough to fit the entirety of human civilization from the beginning of Egypt till today in it three times over. In that vast gulf of time, this only happened twice, and both times these were the paintings were like something done by highly accomplished artists. When people say they know what happened to us in the past and what we really are, I say to them, nonsense. We don't know.
No.
We are a mystery. And what happened in the past is an incredible mystery. Why in the world would Ötzi, the Iceman, have acupuncture points tattooed on his body all of those thousands of years ago? And why did he die in the way he did, going through an alpine meadow, which was then in a storm, and the alpine meadow was then covered with snow that then became a glacier that didn't melt again for 5,000 years? What was going on then? What happened? We don't know.
Will we ever know?
I have a feeling that all will be known. Look how much more we know now. Look at this conversation that's taking place now. I could not have talked like this 5 years ago because I hadn't been. I'm beginning to really put things together and to see the big picture. And that's why I wrote, started to write again, the nonfiction again, because I know the big picture now. I'm beginning to see a larger, much larger scale in both in time and in context. Cattle mutilations, crop circles, the lights in the sky, UFOs, aliens, all of this is part of the same vast, incredible thing that is unfolding in this world of ours.
Whitley, when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, we'll take some phone calls with you with our final hour. We're talking with Whitley Strieber, his website, unknowncountry.com, as we talk about his latest work, Solving the Communion Enigma. Hey, by the way, in December, he's coming out with Melody Burning. It's his very first book for young adults. We'll talk with him a little bit about that later on when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.